One of my responsibilities as Director of Research for IPNI is to anticipate questions and data needs and then be there with those with the answers to those questions in advance of them actually being asked. Well, back in November of 2004, I fully recognized that I hadn't done the job very well when the reports Ray from Louisiana started coming up with this new pathogen in the U.S., where we in fact knew nothing about its the implications of its presence on nutrient management. And so this is maybe out on the bit on the fringe of management practices that are part of this new challenge, but at the same time we think that they are in fact worth looking at. So what we did then after that November announcement was first look around through the research, try to discover what others had observed about Asian soybean rust and nutrient management, and actually I went on a tour in Brazil with some others that were interested in nutrient disease interactions, people from several countries around the world that had studied it and were interested in what was going on in Brazil. That was a useful tour, and then in 2005, early in 2005, we started seeking some funding and identifying cooperating researchers to look at this interaction between not just rust, but between diseases and nutrient management. I want to thank the contributors of unpublished data in this talk I'll be sharing with you. Steve Ebelar from Illinois, Antonio Mallarino, Kelly Nelson, Ray Schneider, Nathan Slayton, and David Wright. For these studies, much of the interesting data is 2007 data, so it's been a bit of a rush to try to get this together. And indeed, as we get into this new data, you'll have to bear with me. These are basically my interpretation of somebody else's research results, where we haven't had that last round or two of interaction with the people that generated the data. So the story may change when this actually gets into writing somewhere. Our review of the literature manifested itself in a practitioner-oriented article that we published on our website called Nutrient Management of Soybeans with Potential for Asian Rust Infection. What it really did was point to five nutrients, potassium, chloride, manganese, phosphorus, and then some slight indications that maybe we should be looking at boron. And that was an important set of guidelines then as we looked at what kinds of studies should we do. I want to just walk you through some of these nutrient disease interactions, recognizing that some of you are perhaps in other areas and don't deal with some of this on a daily basis. Starting with potassium, we think about nutrient disease interactions. Of course, the tradition has been you look at potassium because of what happens to plants when they're suffering from deficiencies of K, thin cell walls, weakened stalks, sugar accumulation in leaves, accumulation of unused nitrogen, all things that can influence how frequently that pathogen develops and gets a hold of the plant, reducing the ability then of the plant to resist entry and infection by the pathogen. Several examples we can cite in different in both dicots and monocots. And so basically what we see is where K nutrition is inadequate, there is potential for crops to be more susceptible to disease. Now that doesn't make potassium, of course, any kind of a magic bullet. If the plant is suffering from potassium deficiency, it's likely to have more problems with a number of pathogens. So a very general observation. This is important for us to recognize when you look at soil test levels, soil fertility levels for potassium throughout the soybean growing area. You see a lot of fairly low K levels in the soybean region. The map you see there shows the percent of soil samples below critical levels as defined by universities in those states based on our summary from 2005. And so those numbers are showing the percent of soils that would result in a recommendation for annual application of K. And you can see some of those are rather high. Well, this was one of the slides from Brazil that caught our attention early on. It was actually an application mishap. And what you're seeing there are strips through this field varying either in the KCL application or the fungicide. And you'll notice that there's brown strips through there that didn't receive either of those treatments. And then there's another greener strip that received both, and then you've got the gradient in between. And so they said, well, maybe here's at least one case at one point in time where it looked like KCL was doing something. And I guess when I saw that, I immediately thought of work that was done back in the late 70s in the Pacific Northwest, in the 80s in the northern Great Plains, and a little later in the central Great Plains, all the way down into Texas, looking at chloride suppression of fungal diseases of cereal crops. Here's a picture taken by Travis Miller from some of his research at Texas A&M. On the right, you see a zero chloride check, spring application of chloride, and then a fall application of chloride, and clear suppression of rust. In our work, when I was at South Dakota State in South Dakota, working mostly with spring wheat, we saw very similar kinds of things. This is a graph of grain yield across X, disease severity is the Y, and then superimposed on that, you have data for leaf rust or leaf spot as influenced by rates of KCL application. And then there's a couple application, a double tilt application there in the far lower right. A couple messages there. One, yes, in this case, the rust and a complex of leaf spotting diseases were both suppressed by KCL, but not as much as the fungicide. And we keep seeing that over and over again, that this kind of a treatment is clearly not a substitute for a fungicide, but it's part of the disease management equation. Not much on phosphorus. In fact, the only data we could find on phosphorus was from the Philippines, but dates back to 1980. And if you look at the treatments there, this is an NPK kind of combination comparison. And if you just look at the rust reaction column, you'll notice that lower treatment there that had all three of the nutrients present had the best rust reaction. So there's a little evidence here that phosphorus somehow may have something to do with the development of rust. When we look at micronutrients beyond chloride, manganese is probably the one that comes up first when we're thinking of soybeans. As we've gone to, glyphosate-resistant varieties, we've seen more manganese deficiency, the characteristic flashing that frequently occurs after the glyphosate application and other factors involved. We're seeing often lower levels of manganese in soybean tissue. And if you look through the literature, you see lots of evidence and rationalization for a connection between manganese level of a plant and its susceptibility to diseases. Again, kind of broad sorts of relationships. What this means to ASR is really not known at this point. A little data from K-State, from Barney Gordon, where he's been looking at this cultivar by manganese interaction. This was published in our last issue of Better Crops. If some of you stopped by our exhibit, you might have picked this publication up. And what you're showing there is, what Barney is showing is manganese rate versus grain yield, and then the darker bars, the brownish bars, are the conventional, and the light green bars are the glyphosate-resistant variety. These are near identical isolines. And what you see, of course, is really no manganese response at all in the conventional, maybe even a little yield reduction at the highest rate, but clearly a nice response in the glyphosate-resistant cultivar, suggesting that manganese was more problematic with that glyphosate-resistant variety. Same plot, same set of treatments, now looking at leaf tissue manganese, and indeed you see much lower tissue manganese levels in that glyphosate-resistant cultivar. Well, and then here's another slide from Brazil. It's a peculiar one. I really know nothing about it. What I know about it is what you see here, that there was a cocktail of micronutrients that don't even know what the micronutrients were, But here we are, micronutrients on the right and the check on the left. And so, again, it points us in the direction of, well, maybe we should look at micronutrient interactions. But again, don't know much about it. So that takes us up now to 2005. We've looked at the literature. We've talked to some people in Brazil, including our regional director there, Dr. Yamada. And we launch into some studies from north to south. You know, it's probably unlikely we're going to have rust in 2005 in South Dakota, but we had a researcher there, Howard Woodard, that was interested in looking at it. And we did set these up where the idea was to look at nutrient disease interactions, not just rust. We had pathologists involved in these studies. So the idea was to gather whatever disease information was present. I mean, that was the concept. So if rust didn't show up, the study wasn't a waste of time. And I think that strategy you'll see seems to have worked fairly well. But that's the distribution in 2005. You'll notice the funding sources in the right corner there. We had no budget for this when this surfaced, and so we did some begging and pleading here and there to put together a package so that we could ask some questions around the country. I won't be using all of these trials. Some of them, the disease severity was very slight, and there's not much there, and I just don't have time to go through all the studies. Here is the set in 2006. We picked up a location in Arkansas, Nathan Slayton, and then also started working with David Wright over in Florida. 2006 for our studies was not the greatest. Many of our sites were very affected by drought. We had very low disease incidence in many of them. Florida was the only location that had rust. We had plots. Ray, you remember 2006, I'm sure, and the problems we had with establishment of these particular plots that year, that we just the weather just didn't cooperate. 2007, a more fruitful year as far as disease pressure at our particular studies we had here. By this time, it was harder to get a lot of interest further north in this. We'd had a couple of years where there wasn't too much going on, and so fewer sources of funding and fewer plots. All right, so what I'd like to do here for the rest of this talk is just kind of quickly walk you through some of these trials, and then we'll try to end up with a summary of some observations where I think we are, and maybe simply pointing to some questions that perhaps we should focus on in the next couple years. Starting with Illinois, Steve Ebelar's work, two locations initiated in 2005, the 2007 data not yet available, so we'll look at 05 and 06 briefly. Factors were it's actually a nice factorial design of fertilizer treatments, potassium chloride versus potassium sulfate, to try to pull out this potassium versus chloride effect, foliar borne and manganese, and then a fungicide and variety. So you had a fertilizer treatment by fungicide by variety interaction. Again, a nice trial. The only disease that we really have any data on there is frog eye leaf spot. In general, the disease was light to none, except in one site year where a fungicide gave a 7-bushel response. None of the fertilizer treatments that significantly affected yield, nor did they reduce disease severity in either year. So in the Illinois studies, we just haven't picked up much effect of fertilizer treatments on really anything, but disease pressure has been pretty minor except for that one site. One of the interesting observations, though, in Steve's data is shown here, and it gets back to that manganese mechanism. What you're seeing here are three varieties. Two of them, the two on the left, glyphosate resistant, the one on the right, a conventional. And then if you look across those bars and note the legend, you'll notice we've got the first one is check, then it goes to potassium sulfate, potassium chloride plus boron, KCl plus manganese, and then KCl plus both boron and manganese. And so the manganese treatments would be the two far right ones, and we're looking at tissue manganese here, and you'll notice, so this bar then should be the elevated one, and indeed it's elevated here, it's elevated here, it's elevated more over with the conventional. And so again, this varietal difference comes to bear that we saw in Gordon's data from Kansas, and that we were suspecting from observations in Brazil as well. Then a peculiar thing that sort of surprised us is you'll notice what boron does to manganese levels. in all cases, the manganese level when boron is applied with the manganese seems to be lower. Now, that suggested antagonism, we'll just be watching for it, I guess. I don't know at this point. We're not going to make a big deal out of it, but it is certainly a question that's been raised by this data. No fertilizer. Again, I remind you here, there's no grain yield effects, no effect, direct effects on disease. Moving over to Iowa, Antonio Mallarino and Dan Kaiser, five research locations across Iowa, all on experiment stations, initiated in 05, no data available yet from 2007. Here, Antonio was interested in looking at some foliar treatments, looked at 3-18-18 and urea ammonium nitrate 2005, pre-plant KCL across two different tillage systems. So we bring another cultural practice, another interaction into the puzzle here. Diseases evaluated in 2006 were bacterial blight, frog eye, septoria, and cercospora. From 2005, again, I'll just make a general statement that fungicide application showed good potential for increasing yield, but foliar fertilization did not and had no consistent effect on measured foliar diseases. So not too much more to say about 05. 2006 was a different story, interesting set of data. What I'm going to do is walk you through a couple of his locations. First, on the Northeast Research Farm, looking at chisel and no-till, and we're looking at incidence of brown spot here and then the yield. And for chisel, you'll notice there is maybe a little reduction in incidence, a yield response, not too much, but some, but more in the more reduction in incidence with the KCL applications and also a larger yield response. So that's at one location, Northeast Farm. And we go to the North Farm. Here you're looking at KCL versus plants with percent of plants with symptoms. And you've got brown spot reaction appeared to differ with the tillage system, chisel versus no-till, more suppression with the no-till. Frog eye spot went from a fair infection level to almost nothing, and cercospora went from something to nothing. So again, appeared to be an effect of KCL application. Yield response is shown here, a little more response in the no-till, where we had a little bit more suppression of the disease versus the chisel. Again, though, remind you, this could be a nutrient response not related to the diseases, so it doesn't imply a cause and effect relationship. Minor disease effects at the other three locations. So this is two locations now out of five where there appeared to be something going on. On to Missouri. Kelly Nelson, Peter Montevalli are the major players involved, but also Gene Stevens and David Dunn. Couple locations initiated in 06. Factors, pre-plant KCL, foliar KCL at a 27-pound rate, applied with and without fungicides at V4 or R4. We're going to focus on the not on the fungicide work here, but on the nutrient work. Diseases evaluated were frog eye and septoria. And now, there's a white bar you'll notice running up and down in that slide that separates the fertility work on the left from the fungicide work on the right, and we're going to call your attention to the fertility work. The treatments, there's the yellow bar is the untreated. Then you have a pre-plant KCL application. That's that bluish bar or violet, and then the low rate of foliar. And then an LSD. And what you're seeing here is some suppression from the pre-plant KCL, less from the foliar, both being significant according to the LSD. That was frog eye leaf spot. Here's septoria brown spot, similar kind of reaction, although there was no effect of the foliar here, but still the pre-plant seemed to be a bit more effective. And then here's the grain yield, reflecting what we were seeing in the disease data, with a nice response to the pre-plant KCL and a little bit of response to the foliar, but certainly much less than the pre-plant. On to Arkansas, Nathan Slayton's information, 8 P and K trials in 2007. No P or K, frog eye leaf spot at just one of those locations, not much disease information to look at, in other words, but at that one location, even though there was an 8-bushel response to K, there was no P or K effect identified on the disease. Okay. On to Louisiana, Ray's work. The data you'll see here from 2005, we've got disease suppression information, but no grain yield thanks to our hurricanes that made them themselves known a little bit down here. Drought caused some problems then in 2006. So we'll look at the data we have and then including some of the 2007 information. Looking at pre-plant potassium chloride versus calcium chloride, pre-plant as well as side dress chloride with the side dress going on at R1, foliar boron plus manganese treatment, and then a couple treatments with urea, and we're looking at Cercospora and rust in these studies. Some of the 2005 data from Ray, looking at pairs of bars where the dark bar is no fungicide, the next one next to it is with fungicide, and then if we look at the fertilizer treatments down here, you'll notice this is the control. Forgot the disease we're looking at here, Cercospora leaf blight. And so it appears there was some suppression here from the KCL. We go over and pick up the manganese and boron, not too much happening. So the fertilizer response then would be looking at these dark bars and comparing them to the fungicide. That's Cercospora. Here we're looking at rust. Again, some effect. Rust, the disease severity here was quite low. Kind of a peculiar increase here again when we got over to the treatment that received manganese but without boron, and I don't know what might have been happening. The numbers are quite low, and so I don't know if we should react too much to that one graph. Then we go on to 2007, greater severity in this study. Very interesting data. Here you're looking at, we're looking at ASR incidence at two different dates, September 20th versus October 3, early R6, mid to late R6, mid canopy versus upper canopy, and then percent leaf area affected. And what you're seeing here is some suppression of rust from the micronutrient application. If we look at the side dress chloride effect, I pulled the side dress effect out because it looked to me when I just perused the data that the side dress chloride was making maybe things worse rather than better. And I don't know if that's a timing effect or if it's a rate effect, but when you look at the ratings here, if we look over at the upper on the upper canopy and the last date, we go from 52% with no side dress to 80% with side dress. Okay, and so I really, at that point, I didn't really pay much attention to the side dress treatments anymore. We looked at the pre-plant rates, and that's what we'll be looking at when we get to the chloride again. Wanted to go back and pick up the urea N work. Ray thought it might be interesting to look at the effect of small dosages of N later in the year, and here's somehow the labels got eliminated from this graph. See that let's go back here and pick up I'm not going to be able to so it's mid, upper, and then mid and upper. That's the on the two dates. So mid, upper, mid, and upper. And so on the later date, mid canopy, you're seeing maybe some effect here of that N where it looked like it might have suppressed the disease just a bit, but then at the higher rate we're back up. And statistics will have to tell us whether that's a real effect or not. Looking at the potassium chloride work, again, interesting response. There's the four, the mid and upper canopy on October 3, mid and upper canopy on September 20th. And if we look at that October 3, it certainly looks like there's something happening with KCL affecting rust incidence here. Now, what's, I think, even more interesting is the calcium chloride plot, where you're seeing about the same effect with the calcium chloride as you were up here, maybe even a little bit more, a bit, although with this particular regression analysis, I wouldn't say that necessarily that those are different, but just the fact that they appear similar suggests, of course, that this might be a chloride response rather than a potassium response. Moving over to Florida, David Wright's work at Quincy, factors are pre-plant KCl and calcium chloride at 50 or 100 pounds of chloride per acre, and then also boron and manganese foliar applied at R2. Disease was rust, and with the data being collected on October 9th. No effect of chloride or potassium apparent in David's work in 2006, and it just wasn't clearly, there just was no response indicated there at all. But with the micronutrient treatments, there they look quite similar to, in magnitude, to, or well, maybe not quite as much of a reduction in severity as what Ray was seeing in Louisiana, but still. As you look at this combination of boron and manganese, there is some rust suppression that's showing up and some yield response. But when you look at these yield data, again, I remind you that you don't know if these are nutritional responses or affect or influenced by the disease suppression that's there. So what have we learned? And I guess this probably should have been labeled, what have I learned by trying to analyze these data from all these researchers? And we'll have to see if the researchers will actually agree with some of these bullets. So really, all I've done here is quantify the number of times things were being seen in the data here on this slide. First of all, with the KCl application. KCl application in some site years reduced frog eye, reduced septoria, in both Iowa and Missouri, but where we had frog eye in Illinois, there was no effect. Cercospora leaf blight was reduced in both Iowa and Louisiana. So you know the mechanisms are showing up in multiple places. ASR in Louisiana showed reduction. Calcium chloride effects seemed to be similar, but we did not see that kind of response in Florida. And there's a lot of potential reasons, I suppose, for that kind of a difference. Manganese and boron foliar application reduced rust in both Louisiana and Florida. Some situations, then, nutrient application can reduce soybean fungal disease severity, but does not substitute for fungicides when pressure is severe. We're talking about fairly minor effects here. And then what have we learned? Well, we've learned that we have more to learn. One question that is certainly obvious is are these manganese effects or are they boron effects? I think the next step now is to look at studies where we can pull those two apart. And I'm still puzzled about this boron's potential antagonism with manganese, whether that's real or not. Potassium versus chloride. Ray's got some information that would suggest that chloride is a mechanism here. If it is, then there's a bunch of questions about rates and timing and where does it fit? Does it just influence the application of KCl? If you're going to apply potash, does that mean we alter our timing to optimize this effect of disease? I mean, those basic fundamental questions like that, if this is in fact a chloride effect. And so the question really becomes, do disease considerations alter BMPs for these nutrients? We haven't really seen anything that would suggest that they do, with the possible exception of this chloride effect, because applying chloride to soybeans is really not part of a best management practice right now. So that's what I saw in trying to mine information out of the data from a lot of different people. It was an interesting process, and I hope we have some time for questions and interaction with the people who own the data. So thank you. Yes, sir.
Paul, it seems to me from your potassium sufficiency map that you showed at the beginning that if these affects the benefit of potassium on disease suppression is real, and if these diseases are going to be an issue, that just good management practices with that nutrient and getting those soil tests up where they should be for other purposes,
right.
Such as yield response.
Well said, Alan. And that was actually one of the reasons for looking at this, is that if you had noticeable, measurable effects directly on soybeans, maybe we could encourage people to be a little more careful about nutrient management for soybeans as a whole, as a crop, rather than further up into the Midwest looking at a corn bean rotation and setting everything up for the corn and then not paying perhaps as much attention to the soybeans. So. Very good comment.
Along the same lines, on your studies, was K-soil test generally adequate? And what, that's the, how
Yeah, sure. In the South, and Ray, I don't recall your K levels in that plot. In that part of the world, potassium levels are usually low enough where that's a frequent input. In Iowa, where we had the other KCL clear responses, Antonio felt that he was not seeing response to KCL where you had optimum soil K levels. So he thought it was, from what he was seeing, he couldn't say that it was anything more than just a normal response to potash, but another reason, again, to do a good job of managing potassium, but not altering any recommended practice. But yeah, another good point. Yes, Cliff.
Something that might be worthy of mention here is the experience that some people in Arkansas had over a decade ago in recognizing we had some areas in Arkansas that actually had high chloride levels in the soil due to high chloride irrigation water.
Right, exactly.
And we recognize that varieties are distinctly different in their chloride accumulation segregation characteristics. Mm-hmm. So that complicates the interpretation here with some of these maturity groups in particular.
Very
and
good
so
observation.
If we don't understand their chloride accumulation characteristics, mm-hmm. it can confound our ability to interpret this as a K effect or chloride effect, and then different suppressive nature mm-hmm. with different diseases. So this is a cloudy picture to have to sort out.
It absolutely is. And with chloride, if we have been paying attention to it, as you're suggesting, it's been to avoid chloride excess problems and yield reductions because of having too high a chloride level when you've got especially a sensitive cultivar growing in a poorly drained soil, that's where we run into problems.
So. Data from Dr. Slade's work, and was curious in my own mind, thinking back that history in Arkansas with chloride, whether there perhaps was enough chloride in the tissue of those plants, even though there was some disease pressure, that didn't, yeah. the treatments didn't seem to have any influence.
We have run the chloride. 10 milliequivalents per liter.
It doesn't sound like it a situation where you'd expect any benefit from additional chloride from the fertilizer treatment.
Usually we see, one year we got a test and no problems in that test, but a quarter mile down the road, same farm, same soil series, chloride wearing things up.
Very good. Yes, Tony. Yeah, actually, it was. I'd have to look back at the rate. I think the rates were. They were maybe was that the one where 60 and 100? I don't recall the rates. They were kind of basically in bracketing the recommended rate from Iowa State, and as they were applied right prior to planting. And there was one that was he had one treatment that was actually a pre-plant. A broadcast versus a band, a below row band. So he had a placement in there. I just didn't have time to get into that.
Thank you. Thanks for your attention.